What is going on, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Next Gen Whitetails Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Harrison Vaughn, and on today's episode, we are joined by Mr. Colin Carlton from Blue Ridge Whitetails. Colin has a plethora of hunting experience and knowledge under his belt, and we are excited today to be talking about predator control and last-minute preseason preparations here in our neck of the woods, as we are within 1 month of opening day of archery season. So stick with us, stay tuned. We've got a good one for you here today. All right, everybody, welcome back. And as I said earlier, please welcome Mr. Colin Carlton to the show. Colin, how are you?
Good, sir. Hope you are.
Doing fantastic. So I told everybody a little bit ago during our intro that kind of the topics to be discussed today our predator control and some of our last-minute preseason prep that we're doing as we get closer and closer to opening day. But before we get into that, what's been going on with you this summer with your whitetail prep?
Man, it's been a crazy 2023 so far. You know, last year we did our first year in Kentucky, got in with a group of guys, and you know it was a good piece of property, but my buddy and I were kind of looking like, okay, maybe it's time to go our own route. And we found a farmer through just talking to people. And it's been good, you know. It's just going to a whole new state is time consuming.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's not like it's Kansas to where it's 14, 15-hour drives, but a five-hour haul on a Friday afternoon after work and then coming back on Sunday still wears you out. So, you know, it's just North Carolina has good deer, but Kentucky and Ohio for us is kind of the place where we've kind of focused.
Mm-hmm. Now, how big are the two properties y'all have up there? How big are both of them?
So, you know, not big, actually. The one in Kentucky is only 90 acres.
Wow.
It's in Lewis County, so it's hill country, but it's just weird how the land lays up there because everything runs through a valley.
Yeah,
and there's mountains on each side. So, and the deer just move differently up there because of that. I mean, ridge tops are the key. You know, if you have a food plot on a ridge top and you have good bedding on, you know, the south and east facing slopes, then, you know, you have good deer movement in there, but the valleys is just the lack of food source is what the key is up there.
Yeah.
There's no fields, there's no ag, there's no corn. Mm. The only food there is post acorns, and once that eaten up come November, December is, you know, maybe leftover winter wheat or winter rye from a cattle farmer.
Yeah.
So it's really focusing on that stuff is important. Now, Ohio isn't but 65 acres, but it joins 200 that we'll be getting next year, we believe.
Okay.
And, you know, it's different because you don't have to have a lot of land up there to have good deer.
Right,
or
exactly.
Deer.
What up in Ohio are y'all, I know you said you're not really surrounded by ag country on the Kentucky property, but in Ohio are y'all surrounded by some good ag, or is it kind of similar where you're really not given that opportunity in some of the surrounding properties?
You know, there's more ag, but it's still not like a lot of ag. Of course, as you get into, you know, more Western Ohio, you start to get more ag.
Yeah.
But Southeastern Ohio, and we're kind of, I would say we're considered South Central Ohio.
Okay.
And, you know, there's just not a lot of food. It's more ag than Kentucky because Kentucky's literally, it's vast, dude. I mean, there's no cell service. There is, like, you're in the deer stand if you play games or watch TikTok or, you know, do something. It's not happening. Like,
yeah.
It's literally you, a tree, and maybe a download a movie.
Oh,
you're into that.
Goodness.
Like, it's just not much. But it's just two different states and how they're hunted. I mean, they're only an hour and 50 minutes apart by drive, but the deer population in Lewis County is much less than Ohio, and you can tell a difference.
Yeah. What, I mean, As far as the quality of the deer, though, like what's the quality of the deer looking like, kind of compared Kentucky versus Ohio? Or have you noticed that difference between the two?
Oh yeah, you can notice, you see it. Yeah. I mean, we're a believer in. When I first got to Kentucky, I got brought up by a good friend of mine, Shane Vosey, you know, in Wilkes County, up in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And he said, Colin, he says, you got to be patient. He says, if you trust me, you'll kill good deer. I mean, he killed a 152-inch 8-pointer last year.
Yeah. Oh, God.
That had 18-inch G2s. I mean, it was just daggers. I mean, it was just massive frame.
Yeah.
An 8-pointer. And he's like, every deer I've killed up here in the last 5 years, I've never seen on trail camera before. He says, they just show up.
Yeah.
It is so vast. There's not many does. These deers are traveling 3, 4, 5 miles to find a hot doe and a quality food source.
Yep.
So he said, if you just focus and you know you hunt hard, you hunt well, and you just, when they come through quick. He said, they're searching, and you're ready. He says, you'll have an opportunity.
Yep.
But versus Ohio, dude, it's like, you know, in the summertime, we're getting pictures of 120, 130, yeah. No giants. I mean, maybe 140, maybe 150-inch deer, but it's just the deer density is astronomically different.
Yeah, I believe. I mean, I'm hunting. Two of the properties I hunt are, I mean, they're within 40 miles of each other. One's in near Danbury. The other one is in Germantown here in North Carolina. And I mean, the property up near Danbury, it's right on the edge of Lawsonville. It's there is no ag to speak of. And when I say there's no ag, there is not an ag field within 15 miles of that property.
Wow.
And I have scoured on Onyx looking for an ag field. There is not one to be found. So as far as like, which is almost the polar opposite of the property that I hunt in Germantown, where the property that I'm on has no ag. It has two food plots that I've put in, but within a quarter mile on one of the adjoining properties, there's a 40-acre soybean field that they rotate. So, I mean, this summer I had a buck on camera that I hunted last year, called him Big Earl last year. He was my
Big Earl.
Big Earl, man. He was by far my most consistent hit list deer. And out of the three mature deer that I was after, he was the only one that I had a daylight encounter with. I saw another one right after dark, but he was the only one I had a daylight encounter with. And it was my own fault. I was hunting with a bow in the middle of November, and he crossed at 60 yards on the edge of the food plot.
That's usually how it goes. I always tell myself I'm going to bow hunt all year, but then whenever a rifle comes around, I'm like,
oh,
one's going to pop out at 80, and I'm not going to have my gun. I said, I'm going to take the gun.
Yep, and that was my mistake last year. I was determined. I was bent on getting it done with the bow, and I went out there, and I'm like, we're going to get it.
But you're heartbroken.
Conditions were right, and I got in there, when I say early, I took a half a day off work and got into the stand at like 2:15, and
wow.
I'm in the stand.
Hopefully it wasn't a very cold morning.
Oh, at 2:45 that afternoon was when I saw him. He walked out exactly where I expected him to walk out, but instead of doing what I wanted him to do, which was kind of meander into the plot, he stayed.
Sure.
Now he was tailing a doe. Obviously, there was a hot doe somewhere on the other side of the property he was after, because he walked through, nose in the air. As soon as he turned his back, I grunted at him, and he didn't even stop. Didn't miss a beat. I snort wheezed at him. He kept on going, and every 20, 30 feet, he'd stop, nose up in the air, and look around, and then go on his way.
Yeah.
But
but
with him up at the property in Germantown, you know, I got pictures of him all last season into January. When I pulled cameras at the end of January, I still had him on camera the last week of January with antlers. And then he actually showed back up at the end of May when I got back out running cameras. He was one of the first bucks to pop back up on camera. Just a kind of like he was last year, just a really solid 8. And from my guess, he was in probably the mid 120s, upper 120s last year as a straight 8. And this year he put on, from as much as you can tell in velvet, it looks like he's put on He's definitely put on a lot of length, and he's put on what seems to be a lot of mass. So I would expect him to be somewhere in the probably mid upper 130s, maybe cracking 140 this year as a 5.5 year old. Because I've had him for 3 years.
Carolina deer.
Yo, yeah, I mean a great deer for the area, but he actually I had him pretty consistently through the beginning of July on camera on my property, and it was right when the beans were starting to get real thick on that neighbor's property. Stopped getting him on camera completely. Had no pictures of him or his running buddy, who was a deer I had on camera last year, who I just called the 8, because he was he was probably a 115, 120, 3.5 year old, 8 point. Very clean, but not a lot of mass, not a lot of length on him. But that's who he was kind of hanging out with this summer. And I was like, I'm going to go and I'm going to knock on this guy's door and I'm going to ask him if I can sit on the edge of his crop field in my truck. And I did. And I glassed him up the first night I was out there. Him and his little buddy that he was running around with in June and the 1st of July, and he was out there feeding in that bean field. And I've seen him 3 other times in that bean field after 5 sits. So it's pretty clear and obvious that that's where he is right now. And I'm expecting that to change. I talked to the landowner, and he's going to be cutting his beans second week of September. So I think I think once the beans are gone, I fully expect they'll move back on to the property I hunt come the end of the month. But for right now, it's just a matter of waiting for that to kind of go away. And then on the other property that has no ag to speak of, I have not gotten a single picture of a mature buck since mid-June.
I used to stress heavily on if I got pictures of deer in the summertime.
I did too. I used to as well.
For the people that are listening and not listening to this, is that Jeff Sturgis, people love him, people hate him. Okay, I don't care what people have their opinion about everything. The whitetail shift is real. Deer move. You know, like they have their summer ground. They're going to have their kind of transition ground, and they're going to have their winter ground.
Yep.
It does not matter what you have in April, June, July, August, September. Exactly. People want to plant their food plots in May, and they'll be posting pictures on these Facebook pages of these food plots in mid-July and August that are lush green and beautiful, and they're holding deer.
Yep.
Okay, well, I promise you that come November, whenever your food plot's burned out, it's eaten to the ground, and you did not get a shot of that deer, your neighbor is going to kill that deer.
Yep.
Because what? It just doesn't matter. You know, there's just so much food from when the browse start in April to green until, you know, maybe mid, even now, you know, food starts to burn out. It's hot. Stuff starts to die off. So now's maybe, you know, they move to more bean fields, more ag fields, more corn fields. Once that gets cut in September, these deer are going to move to acorns that start falling in October.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care what good food plot you have, a white oak tree trumps a turnip any day of the year.
Big time.
I'm just going to be honest with you.
Big time.
So it's just, you know, if people want to put all this time and effort in, like this year, I haven't planted a food plot. I mean, we planted buckwheat in Kentucky.
Yeah.
To use as a smother crop, but we're not planting that until we're going up next week to get the food plot planted.
Yep.
It won't even be established probably until mid-September.
Oh yeah, and
start growing.
I'm on the same time frame as you. It's real. It's real.
It's real. It is. And people just, you know, they want to go ahead and start buy these $50,000 tractors and these plows and these planters, and they got $200,000 in equipment. And I'm just like, dude, I can take a four wheeler with a bat with a sprayer on the back, and that's $500, and go out here and, you know, kill it, throw it down, let it grow, throw it back down, roll it.
Yep.
And I mean, it's ready to party.
Oh, brother, I tell you, all four of the plots I've put in this year were put in with a backpack sprayer, an ATV, and a handheld brush cutter to hand bush hog one of these plots. And that was it. And
doesn't take much.
It doesn't take much at all. And it's they look immaculate. I mean, they were all four of them were disced. All four of them were sprayed in April and then sprayed again in June, completely stone dead. And then they were disced in mid-July. Disced in mid-July.
Yeah.
And
see, that's the ticket.
That's the ticket. And, you know, they're sprayed now. I went up there today to change some SD cards and batteries on some cameras, but looked at all four of them. I was debating on disking them again. But I think they all look fantastic. No growth.
I disagree. You know, it's so hot outside. Anything that's small.
Yes.
And, I mean, they're not calling for a bunch of rain where I'm at, North Carolina, for the next 10 days. So anything small, it's emerging, and we get these 90-degree, 100-degree days that we've been having.
Yep.
No rain. I mean, stuff just dies. It's just not – I mean, it's just not – I want to say habitable, but – it's just not great growing conditions for anything.
It's not.
So, you know, you can do everything right, but Mother Nature will always throw a wrench in it. Mm-hmm. You know, you just, like, for example, our buckwheat in Kentucky,
yep.
And this is part of the prep we're talking about here, too.
Yeah.
So, buckwheat, you know, you plant it, you want to have it crimped or rolled down as a smother crop. Once you see, and people don't know what I'm talking about, you use buckwheat as what we call a cover crop.
Yep.
So, You go out there, you spread your buckwheat. Buckwheat is a very shady plant. So you spread it, I think, I want to say like 50 pounds or 75 pounds an acre. It's pretty generous. It doesn't let any sunlight get to the floor, so no weeds can compete. You go through an eight, so you want to plant it 8 weeks before your fall crop.
Yeah.
So you get out there, you go sow your fall crop into the standing buckwheat. After it's sown, you go over with anything. I mean, it could be a log, just anything to crush this buckwheat. And once it's broken, it dies. Okay. Mm-hmm. You can, and I like to spray over top of it just because I know it kills it.
Yeah.
And it's acting as a natural thatching or a natural straw.
Oh, and that buckwheat has so much moisture in it already.
And exactly. And when this decomposes, it's releasing so much moisture.
Yep.
You can go 5 to 10 days without rain, and you're going to see great results because it's whole. Even the dew. I mean, dew is a powerful thing in the morning.
Yeah.
A lot of plants thrive off dew. And if you have enough dew held in the moisture from the ground and the buckwheat, then, I mean, it really can't be beat.
No.
And the problem was we ran into, we planted it too early, but we also didn't know it was going to rain 3 weeks straight.
Right, exactly.
So on our trail cam pictures, you can literally see it in 4 days go from ankle high to knee high to waist high.
Yep.
And that's just something you can't control.
No.
So you're always going to be fighting something.
It's true.
Rain, no rain. It's just name of the game.
It's the name of the game. And, you know, I mean, the four that I've got ready to go, they're ready. They just got... I'm going to put fertilizer down when I get some good rain in the forecast right around the time I plant, but I'm just, you know, waiting on the rain. One, hopefully in 2 weeks from now, we'll get some rain, which is when I'm looking to plant. But, you know, right now the ground where it was dissed in July has just, it's perfectly clear and it's perfectly compacted. It's ideal for good seed to soil contact. It's just perfect right now. So I'm not even going to worry about doing another disking right now. It's just a waiting game for Mother Nature to see when we can get a handful of days of some rain to get that seed in the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I'll touch on, you know, kind of last minute prep, you know, it's getting down to the wire here. I mean, it's crazy. It's already August 16th.
Oh yeah.
But, I've slacked in North Carolina. I just haven't had time, you know. And when I get a free weekend, I'm driving to Kentucky or Ohio.
Yep.
So it kind of sits on a back burner. But you know, up there, it's like we've hung stands. We actually got another piece of property from the farmer that is his sister's property that we can hunt this year.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't even put boots in the ground. Haven't been there.
Yeah.
So next time we go up, it's kind of like, okay, let's go put a camera up. Let's go, and it's a baiting state, so go throw corn out.
Yep.
See what's around. But I mean, there's also, you know, last minute things that are important to me is making sure stands are good. You know, making sure you have clear shooting lanes,
Yep.
Making sure your feeders are full. I use the Banks Gravity Feeder 350s just because.
How do you like that? Convenient.
You know, if you have bears, no go.
Yeah.
Because I had that joker in North Carolina, and within 2 days, a bear found it. Yep. And that sucker was on the ground within 2 days after the bear finding it.
Yep.
And squirrels, if squirrels can get to it, they'll chew it to pieces.
Yep.
Raccoons, they can, if you don't have enough long enough guard on the post, they can get to them. Nothing is bear, squirrel, or raccoon proof.
Exactly.
If there's a will, there's a way.
If there's a will, you know, there's a way.
So, they're good for up there. They're perfect because there's not many squirrels, there's not many raccoons, and they're kind of on the edge of fields.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen a bear yet.
Good.
So that's the plus. And the nice part is just that they hold. I mean, if you want to go cheap, everybody in Kentucky that I know that hunts around and shoots 50-gallon drums.
Yep.
Cut a 1-inch triangle in the bottom of it.
Mm-hmm.
Set it at an angle with a gravity feeder.
Yep.
I mean, we use those still up there too. But I am a firm believer now. Over time, I am a firm believer in that a mature deer will be hesitant to come to a food source like that.
Yes. I've seen the same things. It's not that they won't come into it. It's just that if they do, a lot of times they are scared to death.
Oh yeah.
And typically it's at night.
Yep. And if you see him, and if you ever noticed, so the deer I killed last year was a decent eight. I mean, he was a good deer. Trail cams are very deceiving because you might think, okay, this deer's coming in from the right every single time.
Yeah.
He's coming from the right. You know how he walks in? He's coming from the right. That's a load of baloney.
Oh, yeah.
Because the deer I killed last year, he came from the left every single time. Every single time. He came from the right.
Yep.
Circled around. Got below my tree. I was running Ozonics.
Yep.
I don't know how he didn't smell me. Got below my tree. Looked at me. Looked back down and walked in.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You just can't tell. I mean, until you get boots on the ground, unless you have four trail cameras on one food plot, you just never know how a deer's coming in.
It's true. Now, was he, on that specific day, was he circling in downwind before he came out into the plot?
Yes. So he came down the ridge.
Yep.
And it was getting dark, and it was probably 15 minutes left of legal shooting light.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just tell the thud of a big deer.
Oh,
you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Oh,
you
yeah.
can just tell whenever a deer that's a mature deer, a good deer, they just have that thud to their step.
They do.
And I just knew it was him. And he walked out, and he took his time. I saw him. I'm like, I know exactly what deer this is. So he came in, finally put in the shot, shot him, ran 50 yards, and I heard him pile up. And, you know, Harrison, what I get too is people asking, they're like, Colin, do you ever get excited when you shoot a big deer? Or do you shake before you shoot a big deer?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I mean, I shake. But, you know, us as hunters, from an ethical standpoint of making sure that the animal you harvest is harvested clean and efficient, when an animal, deer, anything, comes out that I'm going to take, I focus for that second of time. Like, I focus until the arrow leaves.
Oh, yeah.
Until the arrow leaves my bow, I am focused. I'm not shaking. I am set, not looking at the antlers. I'm set on this deer.
Exactly.
I'm
going
to harvest this deer. I shoot all the time for this reason. I say my prayer. You know, I do my thing. I focus. I shoot. Once the arrow leaves that bow, you can't control a thing.
Then it's on. Yeah, exactly. But as much, you know, and that's the thing with it, with, you know, as we're talking about these last minute preparations too, that's one thing that I think gets overlooked. And that is the method of
'cause, I mean,
guys that are only hunting with a gun, obviously, you know, make sure it's sighted in, make sure you're comfortable with your trigger, all
sure.
that.
Yeah.
But if you're hunting with a bow, that
mm-hmm.
should be higher than, you know, tree
Everything.
Stands. Food plot, scent control, that should be your top priority, and that is practicing with your bow, making sure your method is down, you have your mojo and what you're doing when you're preparing mm-hmm. to release that arrow, because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, what's at the end of that arrow, the end goal of that arrow is to take an animal's life. And
exactly.
If you're going to do it the right way, that needs to be the top of your list.
Exactly. And that's exactly a good point too, is like, you know, preparation is key, getting prepared, but it doesn't mean anything if you're not ready to take this animal's life.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, you are sitting here and you're literally holding this creature, and I'm a hunter, you know, I'm the biggest land advocate, animal conservationist ever. Like, I want the world to be a better place for the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
So that means doing my job and harvesting an animal ethically, legally, and, you know, what, by the law. I mean, you know, right. That's the biggest thing. These people, you can have your doubts and your reasons about, you know, the game warden and all the information they're giving to us and stuff. But at the end of the day, they have experts looking at this stuff.
They do.
You know, do I believe with everything they do or say? Absolutely not. But, you know, that's just me.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's your duty to make sure that you do everything you can to, when you let that arrow fly, you know, you did everything in your power to make sure it was at the best of your ability.
Yeah.
And I can't preach that enough, because when it's game time, I'm focused. Like, it is laser focused.
Oh yeah.
When that arrow flies and I see that I made a good shot, that's when the celebration starts, you know?
Big time.
And I want to get your input on that. Like, when do you start shooting? Like, you know, I'm not a big shooter come May, June, even July.
Yeah.
You know, it's just too hot. I just don't enjoy that.
Yeah. So I, in years past, I, you know, would start shooting in mid-July. This past year, I got a new bow in April. So I've been shooting at least 3 or 4 times a week, every week since April. But that was, you know, number one, I was trying to get better use, or get better used to the new bow, trying to get used to, I'm using a new arrow setup this year and a new weight. So I was trying to get used to that. And I switched, to a thumb release.
How do you like that?
I love it. I really do.
Really? Which one are you shooting?
Shoot, I can't remember the name of the brand off the top of my head. I got it over at Drop Time.
Got it.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. And I'll be honest, one of the reasons I did it is because last year I had a wrist release.
Yeah.
It was on my wrist. I went over. I was getting ready to shoot a doe. And I reached around in the tree to grab my bow, and I bumped a hook that I had a backpack on because I wasn't paying attention to the release itself dangling. And after that, I was like,
pegged.
I got pegged. She turned, looked at me, and blew, and I did not see a deer the rest of the night. So I wanted to make a change. So I went with the thumb release, and I've been really happy with it so far. I don't know if I'd say that I've noticed any, you know, tighter groupings or anything like that, but
sure.
I'm more comfortable with it, and I've gotten comfortable. It took a while, but I definitely feel like I'm in a pretty confident place with it right now. But, you know, like you said earlier, it's about just finding that time, whenever that may be. I mean, I'm sure there's guys out there that probably don't need to pick up a bow until, you know, mid-August if their season openers in September. But for a guy like me trying something new out, or if somebody that's just getting into bow hunting, I mean,
absolutely.
Get out there and get after it as much as possible.
Even if it's like in a basement or like
exactly
even 5 to 10 yards. I mean, dude, I used to shoot my basement from 10 yards, just got there and practice on form and just, you know, tinkering. I love to tinker, but I tried a thumb butt, and I think it was the UV3 by Ultra View, and man, I just couldn't figure it out. I tried tinkering with every single setting, and as soon as I put on the trusty rusty wrist release, it was like game on, baby.
Oh yeah, it's the classic. I tell you what, Colin, give me 1 second here. We're gonna take a quick break.
Yeah.
All right, guys, so I've got some bad news for you. Unfortunately, due to some technical difficulties, the second portion of our conversation with Colin Carlton focusing on predator control was cut short, and we are not able to add it to this episode. So we will have Colin back on here in the next couple of weeks to kind of focus in on that predator control aspect that we wanted to talk about. But to give you a little bit of rundown on what we talked about, we centered our conversation around the idea of whether it is necessary in your specific area to focus on coyote control. So for us in the properties that we hunt, coyote control is not necessarily something that we need to do. But what we did talk about being very necessary was habitat improvement and other factors that can influence fawn habitat and turkey poult habitat. So things like leaving food plots and other fields to grow up into fallow so that it can provide that prime habitat for those young wildlife to grow up in and to feel safe. So if you are not personally able to do predator control on your property, whether that's something you just don't want to do, whether you don't have time to trap, whether you're just physically unable to, one of the biggest things you can do to benefit the fawn population and the turkey poult population and other ground nesting birds is to provide the habitat necessary in the form of overgrown fields and other things that can really help give these young birds and young deer the perfect habitat to stay safe. So again, I apologize for the technical difficulties, but we will have Colin back on the show very soon, and we will continue this conversation that we had today because this was an absolute blast to record. I know I learned a lot from Colin, and I hope you all learned a lot from this conversation today as well. So let's jump into our conclusion. Everybody, once again, thank you all for being here today. Thank you for being a part of this awesome conversation that we were able to have with Mr. Colin Carlton. We're excited to have him back on the podcast very soon. And if you enjoyed what you heard here today, be sure to give us a follow on whatever podcast platform you are listening on and check us out on Instagram at NextGenWhitetails. That is NXTGEN Whitetails on Instagram. So be sure to check us out over there. And as always, thank you for being a part of the Next Gen.